All right, boys. Good morning. Good morning. I just want to, and I apologize a little bit for eating into your sheer time with this, but then I want to thank Rabbi Grossberg for allowing me just the opportunity to share with you a little bit. I had a very unique opportunity last week to Baruch Hashem be in Eretz Yisrael. So the truth is, every year, usually, hopefully, sometimes certain years, a couple of times a year, Baruch Hashem is an opportunity for me to take different groups to Eretz Yisrael. So this year we did something a little bit different that I had never done before, which is we took a group of women from the community, Baruch Hashem, for like a chizuk trip to Eretz Yisrael. And the point of it really was to... Tourism is down in Eretz Yisrael, as you can imagine. I don't know if anyone's been to Eretz Yisrael lately, but tourism is down. The economy is devastated, and people just generally aren't going, which makes sense. It's the middle of a war. It's not so posh. It's not life like you know in Eretz Yisrael. You know, for those of you who have had the privilege, and I was there with my family for Hanukkah, and, you know, Eretz Yisrael Hanukkah is, I always say, like, Hanukkah, because I have a shul, I don't really get to go to Eretz Yisrael for Yomim Tovim so much. So Hanukkah is the one yontiv that in the past I've gotten to go for. And Hanukkah is so unique in Eretz Yisrael because in America, you know, what happens Hanukkah? What's Hanukkah like here? You know, what's Hanukkah like here? No one's ever had Hanukkah here?
Awesome.
Awesome. Beautiful.
My favorite holiday.
Beautiful. Yeah, good. That's a good reason. But like, in general, it's like regular. You know, like, it's a regular day. The difference just is that you go home, and you go ahead, and you light the menorah. Yeah, okay, maybe you have a family party, a little bit of a chagiga and yeshiva. But otherwise, it's in Eretz Yisrael, so Hanukkah is just like the whole, you mamish feel like it's yontiv. And I remember even when we were there this year, Hanukkah, just such a different feel, and such a different emotion, and understandably so. Since October 7th, everything in Eretz Yisrael changed so in such a fundamental way. So it took this group from the shul, from the greater community, a women's trip. So all right, it was not so posh for me to always find my place in a women's trip, but I was there, Baruch Hashem, to teach a little bit of Torah and to help kind of guide the group a little bit. And I wanted to share with you just some of the things that that we experienced there that were incredibly overwhelming. And when I say overwhelming, overwhelming doesn't have to mean sad. Overwhelming sometimes just means just that, overwhelming. You know, we all have experiences in life which change who we are. We don't emerge from them the same type of people. So the truth is, today actually I'm only going to share with you really like one experience. Hopefully over the next number of months at different times I could share with you different things, because it's too much to even try to pack in just into one day. But just to give you an idea, our trip was, and I'm sharing this with you because to me, I think that these experiences, even if you don't experience them firsthand, but to hear about them, hopefully give us a little bit of like a vision of who we need to become, what we need to do, and how our lives need to change given everything that's happening to our people. So, you know, on one hand, there were certain experiences which I'll call like geographic experiences. We had the opportunity to go down to the south of Eretz Yisrael, to what they call Otef Aza, the Gaza envelope, and we got to see some of the southern communities that were really impacted by October 7th. We went to play a place called Zikim. Zikim is a beautiful little community right on the beach. Literally, again, it shares a beach with the Gaza Strip. So this was one of the, you know, some of you guys heard, I'm sure, that on October 7th, so the terrorists, Hamas terrorists, infiltrated by sea, air, and land. Right. So one of the places where they infiltrated by sea was in this community of Zikim. Literally beautiful little community. And really, like right on the water. We were taken around by a young man by the name of Elior. And again, I'll save the story for a different time. But Elior was one of the members of what they call the Kitat Hitkonenut. In Eretz Yisrael, a lot of the smaller communities have their own, I guess like what you call like a rapid response security team. And he was there. He was there on October 7th. And he saw the Hamas infiltration from the water. They didn't know what was happening. There were about 40 people on the beach, just like people were just on the beach. And the terrorists came in. Just, again, no one was expecting. The Navy wasn't there. No one was there. And there unfortunately was a terrible churban, terrible destruction right on the beach itself. You see these communities like Zikim. We went to a place, Kerem HaShalom. I don't know if any of you heard the story of the Schindler family. There was, I forgot Mr. Schindler's first name, but Kerem Shalom was a community also right on the border that historically was a secular community. A couple of years ago, they invited a number of frum families, observant families, to come and join them. And they became like this incredible model of coexistence. The Schindler family, Mr. Schindler, got his family into the safe room and he held the door. The terrorists came into the house and they were trying to force open the door. So they ended up blowing up the door. Mr. Schindler lost one hand and three fingers from his other hand, but was able, Baruch Hashem, to save his family. Just like stories like this, we went to Kfar Aza. Kfar Aza was one of the worst hit communities in the south. And to see the destruction, literally just to see it is an overwhelming thing. But I don't want to share with you about the destruction. That was one piece that we saw, which was incredibly overwhelming, just to see the scope of what happened over October 7th. But the other thing we had the opportunity to do was to meet with families. And we met with families of fallen soldiers, as well as families of hostages. And you know, we all know that there are over 130 hostages in Gaza, right? And we know that as of today, there's over 250 soldiers who have fallen in this current war. So we know numbers, but when you meet individual people, you meet individual families, so everything changes. You know, so in Hostage Square, which is in Tel Aviv, we know when we met the mother of Bar Cooperstein, a woman by the name of Julie Cooperstein, and you see a mother whose son is being held hostage in Gaza, or you meet all of these other parents whose children, again, fell, defending Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. It's just an overwhelming thing. It's an overwhelming thing, and you realize the sacrifices of Klal Yisrael. But you realize something amazing as well, which is you would think that things like this are just heavy and sad and heartbreaking, which they are, but there's so much chizik, there's so much inspiration. I want to tell you again, I'm only giving you for a few minutes, one story, one person. The first mother we met with, she's a pretty well-known personality, was a woman by the name of Jen Ehrlich. Jen Ehrlich had a son, Binyamin Meir Ehrlich. So the Ehrlichs are American. They made Aliyah, I think from like the five towns. I don't remember where she said originally that they're from. They made Aliyah a number of years ago. And this son, Binyamin Meir, was 22 years old. He was a paratrooper, San Chanim. And he was killed back in November in Gaza. And she came and she spoke to our group. Spoke to the group. It was, like I said, it was a women's group. So we always just tried to have like women speakers also so that the women could relate to each other. It was really, like, and mothers relating to each other. And so Mrs. Ehrlich, Jen Ehrlich, spoke about her son, Binyamin Meir. And she tells the story, and it's an incredible story. Binyamin kept a diary for the war, like a war diary. And after he was killed, his mother very much wanted to get back that diary. And for whatever reason, like the army wasn't giving it to her, the friends weren't giving it to her, she was very distressed by it. So she tells the story that she went up to Binyamin's room, and she was really like, she wanted that notebook from her son. You know, she no longer had her son, she wanted that notebook, which she felt would have had like his just innermost thoughts and different things, and for her it was a way to connect with her son. So she tells the story that she's sitting in her son's room, and really like heartbroken, of course, understandably so. And she finds on Binyamin's desk a piece of paper. And she opens up the piece of paper. And it's a list of 55 things. Binyamin, Hashem Yikom Damo, had made a list of 55 things that he wanted to accomplish in life. Now let me tell you a little bit about this guy. By the time he was in 11th grade, he had been through seven schools. He was a rambunctious young man. He was a troublemaker. These are the words of his mother. He could not find his place. He literally hopped school to school to school. So as you know, sometimes people think, you know, sometimes it's hard for kids to make Aliyah. He says it wasn't about the Aliyah. he couldn't behave. Like, he could not behave. He could not sit still. In 11th grade, she said something came over him. And she said, it's almost as if he had this moment. And I said, like, when I heard this story, I was like, this is incredible. She said, he had like this moment where he said, either I could just like spend my life fooling around and I could be a joker about everything and I could take nothing seriously and I could be sarcastic, cynical, and just be like one of those guys who just always has a quip, right? A sarcastic comment, a this, a joke, you know, a shtuck to this one or to that one. And I could waste my life like that. Literally, the 11th grade, this is when he had, and by the way, not because anyone, like, it's not like he got, like, into trouble somewhere. You know, sometimes you hear these stories about kids who, like, get themselves, like, into a really bad place. And suddenly, again, oh my gosh, I got to turn around. No, he was fine. He was a nice guy. He had a good personality. He had plenty of friends. But he had, like, this moment, what we call, like, an epiphany. This moment where he's like, I could do more. I don't have to spend my life being a joker. I don't have to spend my life just being sarcastic. I don't have to spend my life just putting people down or making quips or always the guy like with the one-liner or the zinger. I could do something more with myself. So she says in 11th grade, he compiled this list. She was able to tell. She never knew about this list before. He said in 11th grade, he compiled this list. She was able to tell it was 11th grade because of some of the things that he wrote. And she went through, not all 55, but a lot of the things that he wrote on this list. And I wanted to share with you some of them. And it's like a real range. One of the things, he wanted to go to Uman. He wanted to go to the kever of Rabbi Nachman. And he went to Uman. He went to Uman actually in 11th grade. He wanted to go to Uman. I want to eat healthy. Things from his list. I want to have good friends. I want to train to be in an elite unit in the army. I want to have good relationships with my family. I want to own horses. In fact, interestingly enough, when Binyamin was having a little bit like of a difficult time kind of fitting in school-wise, he lived like on a like one of these remote communities where essentially he was a shepherd. It's pretty much what he did. He was a shepherd. And he shepherded like cows and sheep and different things like this. And one of the things, he fulfilled this dream of, you know, riding horses or owning horses. I want to daven with kavana. 11th grader, writing down all of these different things. I want to have enough money. And his mother spoke about this. It was very beautiful. She said that her son, he never wanted to be wealthy. But he just wanted to have enough. And he had like a whole cheshbon about how much money you have in order to have enough. He wrote, Lihiyot Anav. I want to be humble. I want to be humble. Then other things. I want to, listen to this, by the way. I want to learn to live without a smartphone. That's what she said. And she said, it wasn't a frumkeit thing, she said. It wasn't part of our, Kiddusha technology program, you know. He said it wasn't from Kite. She said it was about that he recognized that I don't want to spend my life being distracted. She said something interesting. She said, how many 11th graders do you know that you have a list of 55 things they want to accomplish in life? And of course, no one raised their hand right in the group. She's like, why? It's not because our kids don't want to accomplish things. It's because they're just distracted. They're just distracted. She said the reason that Binyamin was able to compile this life list was because he didn't always have his face buried in a screen. So it's interesting. It had nothing to do with frumkeit. It had nothing to do with anything. It just had to do with wanting to be aware of what's happening in life and not wanting everything just to simply go by without any kind of thought. Other examples. Lihiyot Kohen. He wanted to be a Kohen. Now, of course, Chavra, you know, by the way, I really found this a little bit humorous because the truth is, if there's one thing, if I could trade places with Yossi Cohen, oh my gosh, what I wouldn't give to be a Kohen. I would, for me, it's a little bit closer to home because my mother's side, the whole family are Kohanim. So I have to like live with this reality every day that when Mashiach comes, Emir Tzah Hashem, you know, half of my family is going to be inside of the Beis HaMikdash and I'm going to be like in the cheap seats. You know, I'm going to be stuck in the courtyard in the Azara and that's it. And she said when she saw this, like she this is the one thing she said she couldn't understand. She couldn't understand just about like what does it mean liyot kohen? What does that mean? And she said so beautifully. She said that she understood that what Binyamin meant, and this was after he died. She understood that what he meant by that was what does a kohen do? What's a kohen's whole life?
To God.
Right? A servant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kohen lives a life of service. That's what a Kohen does, right? A Kohen doesn't own land, right? He's not busy with other stuff, right? His whole life, Kohen Reit Shevet Levi doesn't have a portion in Eretz Yisrael, a formal portion. His whole life is a life of service. And she said, she thinks that's what he meant when he said, Liyot Kohen. Just like, I want to live a life of service. You know, after Binyamin died, so his mother said that his friends came and told him that the one thing that Binyamin said from October 7th, from the time that he was fighting, is he said, I was born for this war. That this war, this is my tachlis. This is my purpose. That's what it means, liyot kohen. Just I want to live a life of purpose. I want to live a life of service. I want it to be that I'm just not like kind of just floating my way through life without direction, without meaning, without something. I want it to be that what I do makes a difference. Two last ones. Shalola vazvez et hayecholot sheli. I don't want to waste my abilities. And chevra, again, I can't say enough, like, see, if somebody like 30 years old, 40 years old, was writing this, okay, it makes a lot of sense. An 11th grader. Guys, your age. An 11th grader. I don't want to waste my abilities. This is on his list. I don't want to waste my abilities. One more. La'avin lama bati li'olam. To understand why I came to this world. You know, it's reminiscent of the words of the Ramchal. Right? The Moshe Chaim Letzato writes in the introduction of Mesilas Yesharim, Machovaso Ba'olamo, right? A person has to ask themselves, like, what is the purpose of my life in this world? And again, there's many more because I only gave you a few. But I was so amazed by this. So I was amazed by this on a number of levels. The only reason... And maybe, did you guys ever hear the name Binyamin Ehrli before I just shared it with you? Anyone ever hear of him? So the truth is, like, the only reason now that you've heard of Binyamin Ehrli is why? Is why? Because he died. Right? Because he was killed by Hamas. And by the way, I'll just point out, how was he killed by Hamas? She told this story, and it was absolutely incredible. He was one of the commanders of his group. They had intelligence. They were in northern Gaza. They had intelligence. They had to go into a building, but they had intelligence that there was an ambush in the building. There was an ambush in the building. So the three commanders, how does it normally work? I don't know. I guess the way it normally works in an army is the commanders are the ones, you know, so they would send in like a small team of soldiers to go ahead and see if there was an ambush or not. The commanders, because they only had intelligence that there was a potential of an ambush, but they didn't have enough like specific intelligence, the commanders would not send their soldiers in. The three commanders went in themselves. So Binyamin and the two other commanders, and they were killed in that ambush. There was an ambush. They were killed in that building, but they saved the lives of the rest of their soldiers. So what's incredible to think about is, had Binyamin Ehrli not been killed in combat, and right, we would have never heard of him. Why? Because he's just like a regular guy, like so many other regular guys in Klal Yisrael. But it isn't incredible to see that this regular guy in 11th grade had this list of 55 things that he wanted to do, that he wanted to accomplish. And it's incredible. And it's overwhelming. And again, this is not chevra. This is not some tzaddik. I mean, he is a tzaddik. He died al kiddush Hashem for Am Yisrael and for Eretz Yisrael. But I'm saying, like, this is not some story of someone, you know, who, you know, learned Shas 55 times by the time that he was, you know, 11 years old. Or it's not someone who slept, you know, on the benches of the Beis Medrash. Or not someone classically who, like, Art Scroll's going to write their biography about. He was a regular boy. A boy. Just like all of you. I would say just like me, but I'm not a boy anymore. I wish I was like this when I was a boy. Just a regular kid. A regular kid. Like all of you. But he was a regular kid who decided that he wanted something more out of life. And he left behind this incredible list. But here's the two things I would tell you. Two things. Number one is his mother said something amazing. She said, the list itself is incredible. But you know what's even more incredible? That he actually fulfilled about 95% of the things that were on his list. He was killed when he was 21 years old. 21 years old. He went ahead and he fulfilled close to 95% of stuff that's on his list. Now, guys, I don't know about you. You know, every week I make for myself a to-do list. And letzari harav, you know, unfortunately, I often don't get through most of it. Don't get through most of it. And I could blame, I don't have enough time, I don't have this. The truth is, if I wanted to get through more of it, I could. And here was a kid, 11th grade, made himself a list of 55 things that he wanted to do over the course of life. And he only lived until the age of 21. But yet, again, with all of that, accomplished 95% of the things on his list. It's incredible. And the story itself is an inspiration. And the story itself is something that requires of us to really think about. Like, what do we want to do? What do we want to be? You know, his mother told over that after he was killed, after they were killed, he and the two other commanders were killed in the ambush. So the soldiers obviously ran in afterwards, because we know that unfortunately, again, what Hamas does, Yimach Shemam, is they take bodies, right? It's not just that they kill, but they take bodies as well. So the soldiers went in after they recognized what happened. But they were unable, because I guess there was like a, because it was an ambush, there was like a lot of live fire around. They were unable to take the bodies out. So the soldiers had to stay. So Mrs. Early was saying that the soldier who sat with Binyamin's body, it's really overwhelming. He told the mother two things. He says, number one, he said, Binyamin had a smile on his face. That when he died, he had a smile on his face, almost recognizing that he had fulfilled his tachlis in this world. He had fulfilled his mission, and he had been moser nefesh for Am Yisrael and for Eretz Yisrael. Binyamin was killed. This ambush happened on a Shabbos. So Mrs. Early asked this friend of Binyamin, who was, you know, they couldn't get out. So he's just sitting there with the body at Shabbos. She said, like, what did you do? You know, you're sitting there. Binyamin is killed. What did you do? And the friend said, the only thing I could think to do was to sing Zmiros together with Binyamin's neshama. And so we spent the remaining hours of Shabbos singing Zmiros. So besides the fact that it was overwhelming to hear a mother tell this story about her child, but boys, I'm sharing this with you, not really for the heartbreak of it, because it is heartbreaking. I'm sharing with you because of just, to me, I walked out of this, you know, she spoke to the group, you know, right before, like on the first night, and I walked out, and I said to myself, you know, I am just so overwhelmingly proud to be part of Am Yisrael. I'm so overwhelmingly proud to be part of this nation. Mi ke'amcha Yisrael. Who has people like us? Who has holiness like us? Who has strength like us? And Chevra, you know, a lot of times, like, you hear these stories and you're like, ah, you know what? Okay, so that's Binyamin Early. So Binyamin Early was cut from a different cloth. That's not me. But it's not true. We're all cut from the same cloth. We all have the same spiritual DNA. We all have those same exact kochos. The difference just is that Binyamin, Hashem Kom Damo, Binyamin actualized them. He utilized them. He pushed himself. And a lot of times in life, just we're not forced to push ourselves in the same way. But this is our nation. This is our strength. And I can tell you again, I'm not going to go on more stories for today. We'll save it for a different time. But I can tell you that, like, we met so many children like this. So many incredible children like this. And again, the reason I wanted to share with you the story of Binyamin Early is because he wasn't the straight-A student, right? This is not the kid. This is not the kid who was in the AP class. This is not the kid who was doing trigonometry, right? This was not, so, you know, this is not, you know, the kid who was always doing everything perfect, right? He was like the model student, the model child. Mrs. Early said, I don't remember how many children she said she has, but she said, Binyamin was my most difficult child. She said it, and everybody laughed a little bit because she said he gave me a run for my money. It was never easy. It was never easy. But yet this kid, which I'm sure, by the way, in many schools, was written off as the problem kid, right? And this kid, who gave his parents a real run for the money, right? Look what he accomplished. 55 things on a life list. And by the age of 21, had accomplished more than 95% of them. So boys, I think it's something for us to take to heart a little bit. So first of all, to me, I will tell you, after I heard this, the first thing I did is I made a list. Because, you know, it's interesting to think about, like, I'm talking to myself, like, what do I want to accomplish in life? And by the way, what was incredible about Binyamin's list is it wasn't just about, like, career or different things like that. It was just, like, about what do I want for myself from life? Here you had a young boy who said, you know what, I want to be close with my family. I want to be humble. I want to learn how to daven with kavana. And it's such a real list. Right, because if he's writing on his list that I want to be able to daven with kavana, what does that tell you? I'm sorry.
He doesn't write.
That means that he's not doing it yet, right? If he was doing it already, he wouldn't need to put that on the list. So it's such a real list about where I am, but ultimately, again, where I want to be. So I don't know. I throw it out there. Maybe it's something to think about a little bit, and maybe it's not 55 things. But maybe it's 5 things, and maybe it doesn't have to be like a life list. Maybe it's even just like a weekly list or a monthly list. Just like the little things I want to work on. The little things, a list that you don't share with anyone but yourself. A list that's just between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or you and yourself. And just to kind of put for ourselves life goals. Binyamin was fortunate in that he made the list, and he had the courage to act on the list, so that even though he only had 21 short years on this world, it feels to me like he accomplished in that short time more than what many people accomplish in a life that spans 4 or 5 times that amount of time. So think about your list. Think about your list. Think about putting together that list. Think about the things you want out of life, the things you want to do, the things you want to be. And just because you're in 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, you say, I'm a kid, I have time for things like that. But Yamin Erli was also just a kid when he got started on that list. But I have no doubt that having that list is what pushed him to accomplish more and more. So boys, thank you to Rebbeim, thank you for giving up your time. I know it's precious sheer time. But I think stories like this are they're important. They're important because we should just know the nation that we belong to. And we should just know the Am that we're a part of. You know, again, and it's important, right? Esther Malki hears about the decree, and the first thing she says is, Lech kenos eskola Yehudim. Get everybody together. And getting everybody together doesn't just mean geographically everybody being together, but getting everybody together also means feeling a sense of connection. So at least now, hopefully, you feel connected to one more Jew who gave his life for you, who gave his life for me, who gave his life for us. Because when Binyamin Early ran into that building knowing that there was a Hamas ambush that was there, why did he run in? He ran in for us, so that we, our nation, should continue to exist, so that our nation should continue to have Eretz Yisrael, And now hopefully we feel just a little bit more connected to his story, a little bit more connected to his mishpacha, a little bit more connected to his neshama. So guys, take it to heart. Find some way to Emir Hashem internalize. I hope to share with you over the coming weeks, with Rabbi Grossberg's permission, your Baim's permission, other pieces. This is just one story of probably about 15 stories like this, each of them with their own unique kind of angle to them. But I wish you guys a good rest of the day. Emir Hashem, enjoy the break. And again, thank you for listening.
Did you have the list?
Yeah, so this, Sasha, I could send you.